It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. As we've been discussing, the government shut down for the first time in nearly 7 years after not being able to reach a funding deal by midnight last night. Democrats have framed their battle around health care, trying to extend Affordable Care Act or Obamacare subsidies that are set to expire at the end of the year, and looking to reverse some cuts to Medicaid, the program of health care for the elderly, poor, and disabled that were made by the Trump administration's One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Here's what U.S. Senator Dick Durbin said at a news conference last night, standing next to colleagues, Senators Chuck Schumer, Amy Klobuchar, and Patty Murray.
What Chuck Schumer has outlined is basic. If they want support from the Democratic side, for God's sake, sit down and let's talk it over at the table as soon as possible. There are plenty of tables in this Capitol for this purpose. We can do it. The second point I want to make is a very brief one. Health care is critical. If you've ever had a sick member of your family and no health insurance, you'll never forget it. That was my experience and the experience of a lot of people. To say that we look the other way when it comes to cutting health insurance or raising the premiums to a point where families can't afford them is to ignore one of the very basics of family solidarity. We believe in doing something for health care and doing it right as quickly as possible.
Both sides have been blaming each other for what happened here. Americans, polling, I should say, is showing that Americans are faulting Republicans more than Democrats. The PBS News NPR Marist poll I mentioned earlier said 38% of respondents blame Republicans, 27% Democrats, 31% both, 4% neither. I wonder where they're getting their news. Joining us to talk more about how this could play out here in Illinois is Paula Worthington, Senior Policy Advisor at the Civic Federation and lecturer at the Harris School of Public Policy at the University of Chicago, and Dan Vock, a longtime political reporter based in Washington, D.C. You can read his reporting in the Chicago Tribune. Paula, Dan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
And yep. You can join us at 800-222-9455. Paula, I'm going to start with you. What are some of the immediate consequences you're expecting to see here in Illinois from this latest shutdown?
Sure. Well, thanks for that question. I think it's really important to sort of table set a little bit and remind everyone that federal government spending has two big pieces to it. There's mandatory spending that's about two-thirds of total federal government spending, and then discretionary spending. And it's the discretionary spending, which is about a third of the total spending, that is at issue here. And getting those programs and those agencies funded requires Congress to pass and the president to sign 12 different appropriation bills. So none of that happened. And so now we're looking at what happens when those discretionary programs and such are not funded. And so what we expect to happen, at least initially, is going to be very similar to what we've seen in previous shutdowns. We're going to see certain kinds of activities and programs defined as essential, things like air traffic control, law enforcement, border control. And employees of these agencies will essentially be designated as essential employees. They need to go in, they need to do their jobs. They're not going to get paid in the short run. They will only get paid once the shutdown has ended and there's an appropriations bill that's been signed. Other employees typically would be categorized as non-essential. Those employees typically would be furloughed. They'll stay at home until they're called back. They too earn pay while they are at home, even though they're not working. And at the end of a shutdown, they would expect to return to work. Obviously, this time around, there are many things that are different than they were in the 2018-2019 segment. I think, some of these ideas have already been expressed earlier in this program, of course. Big one, of course, is the Trump administration's suggestion that instead of placing employees on furlough, they're going to actually fire them. So that's a big difference. And then you have the overlay of this ongoing conflict balance of power between Congress and the president over who gets to decide what to spend and how to spend it. In terms of what you're going to see on the ground here in Illinois, basically benefit payments made to individuals, things like Social Security, Medicare, things like that, those are mandatory benefits payments. And so those will continue.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we do
Yeah,
need to take a
please.
break in about a minute here. But
Yeah.
are you sure? I mean, you say they're mandatory, and there's a law that says they have to go out. But I mean, given everything that we've seen this year, how confident are you that that will actually happen?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, I personally think that those kinds of payments will actually continue. I think there are some that are a little more vulnerable, a little more complicated to pull off. I think Social Security is good to go. I think Medicare is probably good to go. After that, I don't know. I think the WIC program, the SNAP program, they're going to be vulnerable.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a break. We'll continue with Paula Worthington. We'll bring Dan Vok into the conversation when we return. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. We're talking about the federal government shutdown and what some of the consequences of that are expected to be here in Illinois. Again, 800-222-9455. This is the 21st Show. Please stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking with Paula Worthington, Senior Policy Advisor at the Civic Federation and an adjunct lecturer at the University of Chicago, a government finance expert. We're also talking with Dan Vok, longtime political reporter based in Washington, D.C. You can read his writing recently in the Chicago Tribune. We're talking about the government shutdown, what was behind it, when it might end, what it means for federal workers here in Illinois, and just the rest of us here in Illinois. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. Dan, I was doing some reading, refreshing my memory on some of the previous shutdowns. I think this is your fourth since you've been in D.C. You're originally from Illinois. You know, talk about how you see this sort of rollout in the city itself, how it affects federal workers, some of whom are your neighbors, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, these are, I mean, obviously there's the immediate impact that a lot of people aren't going to work. I think the bigger, as you see with almost any of these federal shutdowns, the bigger questions, the longer it goes, the more pain there is, right? Like, I mean, sometimes you can't go and use the bathrooms on the National Mall. You know, people are staying home or they're working and not getting paid. But of course, you know, once you get to the first payday that they're supposed to get paid and they don't, that's when the sort of hurt comes in. I think there's just a lot of there's a lot of anxiety having to do with what might be different this time. There are civil service laws that say that you cannot lay people off without the proper notification, which the president seems to not being acknowledging. He says there's always layoffs. There are never layoffs in this sort of situation. I mean, there are other ways to do layoffs, but not just because the budget has been passed. So I would say that, you know, neighbors, friends, you know, other folks in the federal government, it's really about the anxiety of what might be different this time. They're usually painful in their own regard, but this one might have bigger repercussions, and we just don't know that yet.
And worth remembering, it comes after a period of already significant layoffs and reductions in the federal workforce, thanks to Doge and Elon Musk and that whole. Yeah, go ahead.
And a lot of those people who had been sort of given early retirement, their last day of working was yesterday. So, like, all there's thousands of people today that don't work for the federal government that did yesterday. And so that also sort of affects the economy. There's some chatter about, you know, this is this is a federal government shutdown, but the federal government has already been shutting down. They've been mass layoffs at like places, the Department of Education or USAID, all that kind of stuff. So it feels like more of that, just the obviously the magnitude has increased.
Paula, let me ask you, because we were talking about healthcare before the break and entitlement spending, Social Security checks. We had a question from Gina in Springfield who said, in a text message, said, "Will I receive my Social Security check this month, scheduled to be deposited in my checking account on October 8th?" Paula, it sounds like you're saying yes, you expect that will go out. But let's talk some more about some of the things that are more questionable.
Sure, that's a great question. I remain of the mind that normal benefit checks and deposits are going to happen as usual, even during the shutdown. I think it's important to underscore, though, that if a problem emerges, an individual changes his address, an individual beneficiary changes the bank to which, or wants to change the bank to which a monthly benefit check is credited. Those kinds of processes are typically undertaken by the agencies, and they need their funding in order to pay people to do those things. So there's, not only, as Dan Bok indicated, all of a sudden access to certain kinds of public services is diminished, no public restrooms in certain areas where you expect them, closed facilities, national parks that might close, things like that, making the wheels turn administratively, even for some of the mandatory programs, may be more difficult, and those wheels may stop turning fully. And I think that is a potential risk going forward.
And Paula, what do you think about this idea that President Trump has said this could be a chance to fire federal workers outright?
I agree with what Dan Bok said about how, we can talk about this as a federal government shutdown, but we've been trying to shut it down, we broadly construed, for the last 6 to 8 months. And he's right, you have all those furloughed employees that no longer technically are federal government employees as of today. I think the president has been very clear in expressing his desire to downsize federal government employment, and he's trying many, many different channels to act on those desires. Some of those channels have been shut down by the courts. Some are probably still in play. That's what really makes this shutdown feel so much different, I think, than the previous ones.
Dan, you've written about the politics of this shutdown for the Tribune. Democrats seem to have been divided all year. Senator Dick Durbin was famously one of the handful of Senate Democrats who worked with Republicans to at least allow a vote on the budget, although, for technical reasons, they didn't actually vote in favor of the budget itself earlier this year, but they did vote to allow that to overcome the filibuster. But this time, Democrats seem more eager for a fight. Talk about your reporting on, on how that divide is shaking out this time around.
Yeah, I think there's a few things going on. I think the rhetoric that you'll hear Democrats say, and I do think it's sincere, is about healthcare premium, the ACA premiums. A lot of farmers buy their health insurance on these marketplaces. I think that's part of it, but I think that the real reason why this has erupted or gotten to be such a that's a policy debate that you could have in November when and so right now what they're considering is not actually those 12 budget bills or appropriations bills that Paula talked about. Right now what they're talking about is just keeping the doors open till mid-November. You could still have those conversations. It would be late, it would be messy, you could still do it then. What I think is really happening is that up till now, at least as far as I can tell, Donald Trump and the Republicans have not acknowledged that Democrats are governing partners. There's been almost no outreach to congressional Democrats. Hakeem Jeffries had never met Donald Trump until yesterday, and he's the House Minority Leader. When we talked
That's a
about
that
Durbin.
is a remarkable statement. I had not realized that. I knew there had been a thing where he had never said his name, seemingly in a public speech, but I didn't know they hadn't met. Fascinating.
Yeah,
Sorry.
and there's reporting in Punchbowl on that, but the point being that when Dick Durbin voted to allow the previous spending bill to go through, that wasn't a negotiated bill. That was just the Republican bill that had things in it, and he decided that was better. The Republican light version was worse than what might come later. So like, I think there's a real sort of like real sort of question is Donald Trump going to acknowledge the structure of government, the checks and balances, and whatever else? There's also, along with that, these repeated efforts to undermine, I think, as you mentioned, with Representative Kasten, there was the rescissions bill, which defunded public media and in foreign aid. There's the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which again made huge changes to the structure of spending and government. And then there was something that the Supreme Court just allowed, is OMB, which is the budget office, had said, we are not going to spend, I think it's four, maybe it's $5 billion that we are supposed to, that Congress told us to spend in foreign aid, and we're just not going to spend it. But they didn't tell Congress like they're supposed to under the law until like with less than 30 days before the end of the fiscal year. So Congress had no chance to come back and say, no, you can't do that. That's how the law is supposed to act. And the Supreme Court said, that's okay. So this money is going to disappear into a black hole unless something, crazy happens. So I think that there's like real questions for the Democrats. It's about healthcare, but it's about, are we going to have this normal sort of funk, the normal way that Washington and Congress functions, where everybody comes to an agreement and they honor the agreement. And I think that, even as you listen to Representative Kasten, I think that is a big part of what's fueling the anger and the distrust. And like you heard Senator Durbin in that clip say, just sit down. We can figure this out. That hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it's not clear to me how much they want that to happen. Paula Worthington, I want to pick up on something Dan said there, and that is this idea of all the changes that have been happening to the Affordable Care Act. Republicans campaigned for a decade on repealing that thing, and famously, John McCain tanked the chances of it, one of his last acts as a senator. And now nobody really campaigns on that. They don't talk about it, but it seems to be essentially kind of what they're doing through the back door, right? Can you talk about that?
Sure. Thanks for that question. I think the Affordable Care Act had many different parts to it. The ones that are most sort of relevant for where we are right now relate to the Medicaid program and the expanded eligibility provisions in the Affordable Care Act. And then we also have, of course, the insurance exchanges, which are the direct sort of focus of what the Democrats have said they want as compensation for moving along on these budget bills. Starting with those insurance matters, the Affordable Care Act insurance exchanges, in a nutshell, what you have is that for individuals who qualified based on income, they got certain tax credits that allowed them to be able to afford buying the insurance on these exchanges. And those tax credits were made more generous in 2021 and 2022 in the aftermath of COVID. And the expansion of those credits and the more greater generosity comes to an end at the end of 2025. And without those enhanced tax credits in place, people looking at buying exchange insurance products are looking at premiums that are likely to double or even more. And so there's a lot of different estimates out there altogether, but essentially what you expect is that the premiums that people would have to pay are going to be much higher. You're going to see a lot of people pushed out of coverage altogether. CBO estimates that over 4 million Americans will end up uninsured as a result of losing these enhanced tax credits. So that's a big deal. In terms of the Medicaid program in particular, what I'll just sort of highlight is that the
Sure, briefly.
H.R. 1 bill, Had a lot of different parts to it, work requirements, medical provider tax caps, more frequent eligibility determination, all of which sort of move in the same direction, which would be making the program less generous, likely to decrease enrollment, and increase the number of people without health insurance.
I think we have just a few minutes left in the show. Maybe we can get a couple of callers in and let them have the last word on our program today. Paul is calling from Carbondale on line one. Paul, thanks for calling in. What's your reaction to the federal government shutdown?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. As a former federal employee, I lived through three shutdowns, and at this point, I'm just over it. Democrats' posture is a nouveau Robin Hood for the people. Republicans' posture is a quote-unquote standard bearer for true America. And the fact of the matter is, they're all a bunch of, like, cigar-smoking, whiskey-drinking buddies. Behind closed doors, they're the only ones not receiving any kind of difficulty from these times. And so I wish society took it seriously. If you're involved in a shutdown, we're voting you out next go-round.
All right, Paul, thanks for your perspective. I appreciate that. I guess, you know, we're probably going to have to leave it there. We're short on time. And normally I like to end these conversations with, you know, what happens next? What's the path forward here? But I don't know that any of us really have any great ideas about that. So maybe I will let Paula Worthington and Daniel C. Vock off the hook on that question. Paula, Dan, thanks so much for being with us and sharing your expertise and reporting with us today on the 21st show.
Happy to do it. Thanks for the invite.
Thanks for having me.
That is all the time we have for our program today. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be talking with another member of Congress, Democratic Representative Eric Sorensen from the northwestern part of the state. I should also say we have invites out to all three Republican members of Illinois' congressional delegation. I hope they will join us as well in the future. And coming up also tomorrow on the program, we're going to be talking about the job market. It seemed to favor workers for years, but the economy is tightening. Job hunters are beginning to struggle to find work. People who are already employed are hanging on to jobs, even if they don't like them. We'll talk about what's happening and where the labor market goes from here. That's all coming up tomorrow on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.